This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Support for the show comes from Public, the investing platform for those who take it seriously. On Public, you can build a multi-asset portfolio of stocks, bonds, options, crypto, and now generated assets, which allow you to turn any idea into an investable index with AI. It all starts with your prompt, from renewable energy companies with high free cash flow to semiconductor suppliers growing revenue over 20% year over year. You can literally type any prompt and put the AI to work. It screens thousands of stocks, builds a one-of-a-kind index, and lets you backtest it against the S&P 500. Then you can invest in a few clicks. Generated assets are like ETFs with infinite possibilities, completely customizable and based on your thesis, not someone else's. Go to public.com/podcast and earn an uncapped 1% bonus when you transfer your portfolio. That's public.com/podcast. Paid for by Public Investing. Brokerage services by Open to the Public Investing Inc. Member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services by Public Advisors LLC. SEC registered advisor. Generated assets is an interactive analysis tool. Output is for informational purposes only and is not an investment recommendation or advice. Complete disclosures available at public.com/disclosure.
Hello, Malcolm Gladwell here. We're here in New York City with T-Mobile for Business, recording another episode of Revisionist History about how 5G network slicing strengthens trust and connections across worldwide industries.
Slicing can be used for so many different things. We're here with our friends from CNN, from Siemens Energy. The ways that it can be used, frankly, are limitless and are really, really built to think through how can T-Mobile understand the pain points that our customers have, smash those pain points, and help you deliver very specific outcomes.
Insurance may all seem the same on the surface, but having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. As the leading auto and homeowners insurer in the U.S., State Farm is there how and where you need them, whether that's in person with a local State Farm agent, on the phone, online, or through their mobile app. State Farm can help you find the right coverage for your needs. Don't take a chance with insurance coverage that may not meet your needs. And don't settle for insurance that may only be halfway there. Stop living on a prayer. Get State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
If you're struggling with weight loss, start your journey at LoseWeightNow.co. Because Orderly Meds helps people get real results with proven GLP-1 semaglutide starting for as little as $74 a month. No waiting rooms, no confusion, just real support and guidance you can count on all year long. Get started today at LoseWeightNow.co. Individual results may vary. Visit LoseWeightNow.co and get started today. That's LoseWeightNow.co.
This is Lee Habib, and this is Our American Stories, the show where America is the star and the American people. And to search for the Our American Stories podcast, go to the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Up next, we're going to hear from Ryan Stewart. After going through life unsure of what he wanted to do for a long time, he settled on something quite out of the ordinary. Today, Ryan runs a very successful dog walking business in New York City. But a job isn't the only good thing in life that dogs have brought him. Ryan's here to share about the many ways in which dogs have impacted his life and continue to do so daily.
I was born in Taipei, Taiwan, and I was given up for adoption like immediately. Like when I was 3 days old, I was handed over to a military family. And they weren't happy together. You know, it was one of those marriages where the woman was pregnant, and so my father thought the honorable thing to do would be to marry her. But they weren't really a good couple. So I think they tried to fill that with kids. And so they adopted me, and then they adopted two other Taiwanese children. And, you know, they had two of their own, so then they had five. And when I was six, my adopted mother and my adoptive father divorced, and she left the house, and he raised us for a while alone. My father, growing up, I always thought he was really, really boring. He didn't talk much. He did stuff like he ate the same food. I remember he ate like grape nuts and like almost every morning, or oats or something like that. And he liked peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And he, aside from his military outfit, he wore like jeans and a t-shirt and like a cheap windbreaker. And it never occurred to me that he was anything more than like a boring man. But later on in life, now he's my role model. I mean, he adopted me and two others from Taiwan, and he put bread on the table. He took no credit, no glory, no limelight. You know, he was a church-going man. The church loved him. I remember I spoke at his funeral at the church 10 years ago or so, and I told them, I told a church full of people that I would be pretty proud of myself if I could somehow become half the man he was. You know, they say blood is thicker than water. He adopted me, so I always think now that sweat is thicker than blood, because he put the work in, man. We were in D.C. for several years, and I got the crap kicked out of me like on a daily basis growing up in D.C., so I toughened up. I've had to fight every day, you know what I mean?
So then we moved to Europe. He was reassigned, and we were in Holland, and that was interesting too, because then you're like, you're the Yankee, you know? I remember there was this big graffiti near, like two blocks from our house, that said, "Yankee, go home." I remember reading that every day of my life there. But for the most part, I loved Europe. I got in a lot of trouble at first because I was used to fighting. So, you know, I thought, oh, you know what I mean? Like, you solve your problems with your fists. Well, you know, like in nicer areas.
You don't do that, you know? So I was in the principal's office. I was like his favorite, you know? He's like you again. And then he would have like a bowl of candy and say like, have a candy, sit down. And then he wouldn't even discipline me. He would just sit there and talk about his childhood and I would just listen to him. I also accelerated grades. So I apparently was very smart when I was young. I don't know what happened, you know, where it went. But when I was young, I was very, very smart. And I would be like that kid who you get an hour to take a test. I'd finish it in 20 minutes and slap it on the teacher's desk. And then all the kids would look up, you know, and glare at me, you know, and then I got beat up for that. So slowly learned that fighting wasn't that, you know, the way to go. And then we moved from Europe to the St. Louis area, St. Louis suburbs. And I got picked on a lot because I was small and young. But fortunately,
my sisters were pretty popular, you know, homecoming queen, stuff like that. So a couple of the guys who became my friends wanted to get closer to my sisters. So they would sort of try to get close to me, you know. And so that helped me a lot. I finally probably stopped getting picked on when I was maybe like a senior. So, you know, we had chores. One of my sisters would maybe be doing the dishes, and my brother maybe has to mow the lawn, but I had to walk the dog. So I always had the dog's company. And something that sort of saw me through my solitude was my relationship with dogs. And I don't know what I would have done without them. Years later, my girlfriend at the time got a new puppy and she got a trainer and I watched the trainer. You know, I followed the directions and the trainer looked at me and says, "You have a natural talent with dogs, you know, have you ever thought about working with dogs?" And so what I did with that is nothing, but I did read some dog books and I taught that dog maybe 40 or 50 tricks, like walking on its hind legs or walking or belly crawling like an army soldier, or turning circles one way or turning circles the other way, or, you know, playing dead or rolling over, you know, all kinds of tricks. And we used that dog for like commercials in New York City and stuff like that. And that got me hooked up with a commercial agent for animals. And so she would always call me. And so I've done, you know, I've been the trainer on set for dogs on stage, dogs on runway, dogs on commercial sets, dogs on short film sets. So I wasn't really full-time into it at that point. I was just kind of beating around the bush, you know, picking up some commercials here and maybe like sometimes waiting tables. And then I'm not sure how appropriate this is, but I started selling mushrooms. So this was like 8 years later. I was going out with a different woman now and she said, "What are you doing with your life? You know, like, what are you doing?" It's not that she was a nice person, but she was smart. And I said, "Well, what should I do?" And she said, "Well, you're good with dogs. Why don't you try working with dogs?" And basically she said, "If you don't quit all this nonsense that you're doing, I am going to break up with you." And so I almost got forced into the dog business. I looked into working in a dog daycare. It just, the money wasn't good enough. Training wasn't steady enough. And I looked into dog grooming. I just wasn't into grooming, you know? It just wasn't me, and so I just settled on dog walking.
And you're listening to Ryan Stewart share his own stories, not only about his passion for dogs, but about everything else from his father to his girlfriend telling him to essentially grow up. When we come back, more of Ryan Stewart's story here on Our American Stories. Lee Habib here, and I'm inviting you to help Our American Stories celebrate this country's 250th birthday coming soon. If you want to help inspire countless others to love America like we do and want to help us bring the inspiring and important stories told here about a good and beautiful country, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to Our American Stories. Go to OurAmericanStories.com and click the donate button. Any amount helps. Go to OurAmericanStories.com and give.
Support for the show comes from Public, the investing platform for those who take it seriously. On Public, you can build a multi-asset portfolio of stocks, bonds, options, crypto, and now generated assets, which allow you to turn any idea into an investable index with AI. It all starts with your prompt. From renewable energy companies with high free cash flow to semiconductor suppliers growing revenue over 20% year over year, you can literally type any prompt and put the AI to work. It screens thousands of stocks, builds a one-of-a-kind index, and lets you backtest it against the S&P 500. Then you can invest in a few clicks. Generated assets are like ETFs with infinite possibilities, completely customizable and based on your thesis, not someone else's. Go to public.com/podcast and earn an uncapped 1% bonus when you transfer your portfolio. That's public.com/podcast. Paid for by Public Investing. Brokerage services by Open to the Public Investing Inc. Member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services by Public Advisors LLC. SEC registered advisor. Generated assets is an interactive analysis tool. Output is for informational purposes only and is not an investment recommendation or advice. Complete disclosures available at public.com/disclosure.
Hey, this is U.S. Olympic gold medalist Tara Davis Woodhull.
And I'm U.S. Paralympic gold medalist Hunter Woodhull.
As athletes, our lives are about having a clear path.
And a team that you can absolutely trust.
So when it came to getting the best mortgage,
we chose PennyMac.
PennyMac is proud to be the official mortgage provider of Team USA and you.
Learn more at PennyMac.com. PennyMac Loan Services, LLC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS ID 35953. Licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Conditions and restrictions may apply.
Hello, Malcolm Gladwell here. We're here in New York City with T-Mobile for Business, recording another episode of Revisionist History about how 5G network slicing strengthens trust and connections across worldwide industries.
Slicing can be used for so many different things. We're here with our friends from CNN, from Siemens Energy. The ways that it can be used, frankly, are limitless and are really, really built to think through how can T-Mobile understand the pain points that our customers have, smash those pain points, and help you deliver very specific outcomes.
Living on a Prayer. Yeah, that song gets everyone singing, and now singing it could send you on a flyaway trip for two to see Bon Jovi live this summer. Enter the iHeartRadio Give It a Shot sweepstakes presented by State Farm. Want bonus entries? Submit your best rendition of the song and possibly have it featured on air or on social. Enter now at iHeartRadio.com/giveitashotsweeps.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents of the 50 United States and D.C. 18 plus void where prohibited. Sweepstakes ends on 2/23/2026. For official rules, visit iHeartRadio.com/giveitashotsweeps.
And we continue with Our American Stories and Ryan Stewart, owner of Ryan for Dogs, a successful dog walking business in New York City. When we last left off, Ryan's girlfriend was pushing him to grow up and to get a life and, well, get serious about his life. Let's pick up where we last left off.
Being a dog walker, it's scalable. Like, if you walk three dogs at once, that's three times the money of walking one dog. Although I wasn't really, like, the goal wasn't to make money. The goal was just to get a regular job so my girlfriend wouldn't leave me. So it was a little slow going at first because you're going to go into someone's house with their keys and take their precious dog out for a walk. So the most important thing is having the people who hire you trust you to go into their house. So you start off slow and you have to build a reputation. So the first couple years are kind of slow and I'm not making a lot of money. But as the years progress and you do a good job and you work hard and you don't kill any dogs or lose any dogs, then you get more of a reputation and more people hire you. And it's just, I didn't imagine this would turn into like, I mean, it's 15 years later now. So it wasn't how I imagined it would turn out to be, but it's what's known as life beyond my wildest dreams. I actually like who I am finally. I work with dogs every day, 7 days a week, and I haven't taken a vacation since 2008. It must be because dogs are great. So when I first started walking dogs, it was a bit of a novelty to get large groups together, you know, because then it's sort of fun because, you know, like, wow, how many, like, you want to stretch your limits. Parents out there, that's why your teenager drives 95 miles an hour and gets arrested, because they're testing their limits. So when I first started, of course, I'm like, huh, I can walk three dogs together. Let's try four. Let's try five. And so I would go up to 12 all at once, sometimes on a bike. Sometimes I would be riding a bike with like 10 dogs on one side. The thing is, that's really hard. So I would prefer not to make my job harder, because what happens is if you have like 12 dogs and one of them stops to poop, you sort of have to kind of shift all the other 11 to one side. You've got 12 leashes and you have to get your poop bag out, and then you have to somehow like reach over and get the, and still keep the other 12 from fighting each other and pick up that poop and then get it to a trash can, and then like, whew, that was like 2 minutes of hard work getting that poop up. Let's be on our way. And you take three steps and then another one starts to poop. So like three or four or five, you get a lot more done. Plus people don't stare at you and take your picture. There was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal that, you know, where the guy scoffed at dog walkers and said, anyone can walk dogs. Let's not even call it a profession. And he might be right when it comes to one dog, or maybe even two, but if you want to walk six or eight or 10, you have to be good. You have to have some talent. There's certain types of customers who like me because I'm no nonsense, like at all. I'm actually considered a bit rude, but I'm not trying to be rude. I just don't feel like BSing. And I've noticed that amongst a lot of good trainers that I've known. Good dog trainers are so to the point that it's almost considered rude. Like, we would be at dinner. My mentor, her name was Linda, she would, like, in the middle of dinner, she'd say, I'm not feeling very well. I'm gonna go home. And she'd stand up, you know, throw $60 on the table and leave. And I'm in the middle of like my quesadilla, you know what I mean? Dogs are to the point. That's what dogs understand. So if you work with dogs for years, you're just to the point. Eventually, after several years passed, I was popular enough where I had too many dogs to walk myself. And so I hired a guy, and then, you know, another couple years passed, and then I hired another one. And I looked at it and I knew I could hire more and more and more. And I could become a manager or owner of a large operation. And very quickly, I saw that when you have people working with you or for you, they're human beings, so they have their flaws. So some of them are late often, or some of them don't communicate well, or, you know, and so that can be very annoying. So I thought, well, gee, like if I keep hiring people, I'm going to be annoyed all the time. And I'm like, that's not what I signed up for. I signed up to work with dogs. And so I held at three people. I also do dog training on the nights and weekends, and I could do that like a lot, but training is difficult for me because I will go and meet a dog owner and their dog, and I will tell the dog owner what to do, give examples, and they will nod their heads and say that's completely makes sense, and then they will go back to doing exactly what they were doing before. So that's not easy for me, to get paid to be ignored, and that's what it feels like. So I'm not overly fond of training, but I do it. I have a Rhodesian Ridgeback that came first, a German Shepherd, and he's like a little terrier mix. They were all owner surrenders, so they all have their little problems. I had known this little terrier. They hired me to walk their dog, and the owners finally gave up on him after 5 years of trying and trying, and they knew they wanted kids, and he's a biter. He bites them, he bites other dogs, he was gonna bite their kids. And they said, we can't keep him, we're gonna turn him into a shelter. And I knew that, like, he's gonna get killed, you know, because he's gonna bite his next owner. So I kept him myself. He's not my favorite dog. Sometimes I wish I didn't have him. Often I wish I didn't have him. He's a pain in the ass, but I see a lot of myself in him. I was given up more than once, like him, and it's like personal. Like, I'll be damned if I'm gonna give up on him. Now I take dogs into juvenile detention facilities for a job, and they tried several people before me, and they don't last very long, like a week or two, because you can't just want to help. You have to be able to mingle with like 18-year-old convicted murderers and be comfortable with them. And coming from a tough background, you know, that helped me a lot. And also having made so many mistakes in my life helps me not judge others. And I've been working there for about a year and a half now. I'm trying to get youths to engage and to bring them out, you know, and get them to talk about themselves and try to get some of them to learn something. And sometimes that's not easy because they're very guarded. I'm working with teens who have shot someone. Most of them have killed. I bring the dog in and it grounds them. You know, their feet don't touch the earth anymore and the sun doesn't kiss their face. So if I bring a dog in, they can touch the dog and then they touch the earth by touching the dog. And perhaps just for that minute, they feel human again. You know, despite the horrible things that they did, they're still children of God. And I'm not saying I want them out on the street to kill again, but that's what dogs did for me. They kept me from straying too far off base when I was in my darkest. I think they have helped me be very in the moment. So that's what I use. I use that ability when I'm in the juvenile facility because I don't care what they did in the moment, like a year ago or like 6 months ago. I just try to get them to engage with me now. These are hardened murderers, but some of them are still 15 or 16. So there's still a child in there. And so then you get the dog there and sometimes you can see the child come out and that's pretty heartwarming. Like one time I saw this big guy, you know, he always acts tough, and I brought in a French bulldog, and French bulldogs are like kind of, you know, kind of interesting looking. They look like little frogs, and he stopped acting cool because he just forgot who he was, and he was jumping up and down off the ground, this big 6'2" guy who killed someone, and he's jumping up and down like a little kid. And I looked at that, I'm just like, yep, some of them are still kids, you know. So dogs have done a lot for me, and also, like dogs, I was taken from my original mother and rehomed immediately. So all dogs are that. So basically I'm a dog, you know? It's not really glamorous to be a dog walker, but I find that I care about that less and less.
And a beautiful job on the storytelling and production by Madison, and a special thanks to Ryan Stewart, owner of Ryan for Dogs. And what a story, starting with his dad, who at first he thought was a boring man, and soon came to see his dad as a role model. And right up to his girlfriend pushing him to get a job, to him admitting, I like who I am, finally, and helping these kids who have done some bad things in their life and using dogs to make their lives better. I still have a picture of 12 dogs on a bike. I don't know how the heck that happens. Glad he got down to 3, 4, and 5. The story of a professional dog walker and how dogs changed his life and shaped it, here on Our American Story.
Living on a Prayer, that song gets everyone singing, and now singing it could get you on a flyaway trip for two to see Bon Jovi live this summer. Enter the iHeartRadio Give It a Shot sweepstakes presented by State Farm. If you want bonus entries, submit your best rendition of the song and possibly have it featured on air or on social. Enter now at iHeartRadio.com/giveitashotsweeps.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents of the 50 United States and D.C. 18 plus. Void where prohibited. Sweepstakes ends on 2/23/26. For official rules, visit iHeartRadio.com/giveitashotsweeps.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.
You ever wonder how far an EV can take you on one charge? Well, most people drive about 40 miles a day, which means you can do all daily stuff no problem. Go to work, grab the kids at school, get the groceries, and still have enough charge to visit your in-laws in the next county. But they don't need to know that. And the best part? You won't have to buy gas at all. The way forward is electric. Explore EVs that fit your life at electricforall.org.
This is Radhi Devlukia from A Really Good Cry. I absolutely love being outdoors, even if it's just stepping outside for a bit of fresh air between meals or taking a mindful walk to clear my head. But the one thing that can really ruin that is when my feet feel cramped in my shoes. So I switched to ultra running, and honestly, it makes such a difference. What I love most is their signature ultra fit, comfort balance strength. They have this roomy toe box that lets my toes actually spread and move naturally. So I really appreciate that. And I feel more grounded and balanced with every single step. It's like my feet can finally do their job, using all those little muscles that make me feel stronger the more I move. Whether you are a marathon runner, beginner or advanced, or just getting outside to train, Ultras have become my go-to for running and moving mindfully. They fit so well, they're so comfortable, and they just move with you. Shop now at ultrarunning.com and use my code CRY10 for 10% off. That's ALTRARunning.com. Experience Ultra and stay out there.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.